It's 88.5 FM. Jeff Penfield, joined live in studio today by Ockerville River. New album's called In the Rainbow Rain. And Terragram Ballroom is where they're going to be playing tonight with a great show that we're presenting. So right now sitting with Will Sheff. Thank you so much for stopping on by and talking with us today.
Thank you, Jeff. It's cool to be here.
Had a great set here and kind of wanted to start out where the origins of the album came from and the new project. And we'll start with the band. This is the same band as your last one, Away, correct?
That's right, yeah. Although for that project, they were new. They were brand new. In fact, people that I had only met to ask to perform on the record. Because Away was very much about me feeling an inner responsibility to make the most engaged music that I could. I felt like there was a certain level of something pushing through, you know, in my writing that was trying to come out that I needed to sort of change everything up. And so I started to sort of go off on my own and think about what, you know, got me passionate about music way back in the first place. And so I just sort of like hired people one by one. Oh, I like this guy's guitar playing. I like this guy's bass playing, and started putting it together. And when we went on tour in 2016, it was like when we were first actually getting to know each other and becoming friends. And what I realized was that it was just such a wonderful, I felt like I was seeing things through their eyes for the first time. I felt like I was able to start from this fresh place. And we were having these really great shows and a really great spirit and feel, and I just felt very inspired. And so I booked time right away to just make a new record. So as soon as we finished touring on the last record, we made this one.
The chorus of people don't move back to LA. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that song right now, considering we are in Los Angeles.
Of course.
But it wasn't created so much as a, if I'm not mistaken, it wasn't created as a diss to Los Angeles.
No, not at all. Not at all. It more comes from me being in New York and miserable and hating it, and the only thing that was making it better was my friends, and then them leaving and going to LA, and me being like, don't go, don't leave me, don't go and like clean up your act and like get a nice house and like be happier, stay with me in the misery that is New York City. But I also think that song, to a certain degree, in a sort of a subtle way, is talking about how it would be neat if there were, you know, it'd be neat if we could make all the other towns as cool and exciting and fun as LA, and all it takes is for people to put some energy into those towns, you know what I mean?
West Coast.
The sound is what really comes out of this album, because you listen to Away, it's a little, it seemed like, at least, you know, I took a quick listen back, it was a little more stripped down. This one, a lot of layers, and you brought on a guy, Sean Everett, to mix it down. Mm-hmm. The guy's done War on Drugs, obviously. It's got a lot, who does a lot of complex layers too. Mm-hmm. How did he get involved? How did you reach out to him?
That was the idea of our A&R guy, John Salter. He was just like, you should work with this guy, Sean Everett. And, you know, Sean has worked on all kinds of stuff that I think sounds amazing. You know, like, you know, obviously War on Drugs, and but also Perfume Genius, who I'm a big, big fan of. And I really love that record. I thought the Alabama Shakes record sounded great. And, you know, he works a lot with Blake Mills, who all that stuff sounds amazing. So I was just a fan. And I was like, yeah, sure. I know he's a busy man, but if he's free, let's do it. Yeah, we had a great time. You know, I already had recorded everything, and I had a very specific sort of vision for how it was going to be. And then I kind of came out here, and Sean, what Sean did, because it's a real representation of everything we recorded, but it's so much hairier and fuzzier and gnarlier than I had originally intended. I hope Sean doesn't mind me saying it, that initially I was a little bit like, whoa, I was a little bit scared by it, because it was very different than what I thought. And then I started to hear in it this callback to the work of Brian Beatty, the first producer we ever worked with, who's similar to Sean, very like fat and distorted and fuzzy and kind of like bold decisions. I almost started hearing this Black Sheep Boy quality, this quality that it had from a record of ours from 2005, in like the way the bass sounds and stuff like that. So yeah, Sean really did leave a strong imprint on it in a lot of ways.
Famous tracheotomies.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's, you know, the music itself, it's fun. It's, you know, you're having fun with it and you're listing off these people who went through this very intense type of thing. A tracheotomy is like no fun, but you're, it's this playful way of looking at it and looking all the at all the people in all the point, and even to the point, to the extent of all the points that they were in their lives. You're like, oh, Gary Coleman, he was 40 years old. He was, you know, a lot older at that point. And then you're like, oh, Ray Davies, he was 13. So he was really young when this happened. So, you know, really the album kicked off that way, in this fun, you're looking at this very serious situation, but kind of in this fun, like, hey, it's going to be all right way.
Yeah. I mean, a tracheotomy is something that you do to save someone's life. And so it's very, very desperate. And in the process of telling stories about tracheotomies, it's meaningful to explain like what got them to this point where someone was trying to save their lives and where they were at that time. And there's something inherently offbeat about writing a song about tracheotomies. And so
did you have to like research them? Like, yeah. Did you actually have to go through and be like, I wonder who else had tracheotomies?
Yeah, but it was a little bit tricky because you'd be like, oh, well, you know, Mary Wells had a tracheotomy, but that's all that I can find about that. So then you kind of will start Googling Mary Wells like health problems or Mary Wells like family history. And then you get these, you know, as much as I have mixed feelings about Google Books, there'll be like some little snippet of a book that appears where they get into like, you know, who performed at her benefit and like how much longer she lived. And, you know, you have to try to boil that. I had to try to boil all of this down into something that was like singable. And what I hope is it feels like you're kind of walking from room to room, you know, just going into these stories of these people's lives, and that that there's something that kind of comes out. You get to, like you say, you get to see them in a new way. You get to see Ray Davies as like a vulnerable kid instead of a like a legendary sort of songwriter. And you get to see Gary Coleman as maybe more of a human in pain, as opposed to like a funny thing, a funny name to say. And yeah, I think that sort of like groovy, light funk kind of vibe, like that kind of music just makes me very, very happy. You know what I mean? Like I hear, I think of electric piano, and I think of that particular drum machine that we used, which is the In the Air Tonight, and I Can't Go for That drum machine. So, you know, soundtracked a lot of songs of my youth.
When I had my tracheotomy, I was blue and had stopped breathing. There was something wrong with me. Doctors cut through the cartilage and skin at the bottom of my throat, and then they snaked that trache tube in. And I was one and a half. I was my parents' only kid, and they had lost two before that. And growing up, I always knew how close I'd come. Well, that must have been scary, Mom. Gary Coleman, he was Arnold on TV. And I grew up watching him and Conrad Bain and Kimberly. Turns out that it had a trach scar too, where they cut into his throat and then they threaded that tube through. But that was much later on, in the year that he turned 40, when his fan base was all gone and his health was so touch and go, his girlfriend proposed. They broke up on a TV show. Mary Wells, she was known as Motown's queen, but laryngeal cancer left her unable to sing. They tried radiation and multiple surgeries, but she didn't have insurance and lost almost everything. Diana Ross helped with the bills. Aretha Franklin tried her very best to help out Mary Wells. And Dionne Warwick did all she could do. And Mary Wells, she pulled through. After one more year or two. Till and Thomas looked completely pale and weak. On a trip to New York City to promote his poetry. 3 straight days of drinking out in Greenwich and Chelsea. He was taken to the hospital, turned blue and not breathing. And Catlin Thomas said, oh, when she walked into St. Vincent's, is the bloody man dead yet? And later that day she got so drunk she was restrained, and her husband slipped away. Ray Davies had a tracheotomy. He was at St. Thomas Hospital in London, age 13. And during his long recovery, nurses put him in a wheelchair and they'd wheel him out onto a balcony. And down that evening, sun did sing, painting London and the river and that freaked out future king. Waterloo lit up for one sick kid and at 23 he recorded a song about it.
Chef here talking with me about Ockerville River's new album, In the Rainbow Rain. Thank you so much for coming on in today.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. I appreciate it, man.
They're playing at the Terragram Ballroom tonight. It's 88.5 FM.